Hi, welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So we're always going to ask the question, how was your past week?
I feel like, was it last episode that we talked about Secret Santa? Or was it the episode before? Okay, so it has begun. Secret Santa week has started at work. And my person didn't bring me a gift this day. Well, I mean, the week is just, I don't know if you want like a look behind the curtain, but we record at the beginning of the week. So it, the Secret Santa is a week long, but day one, I didn't get a gift. And
so what's the,
was that?
Oh no, I was going to say, so what's the rule with the, with your Secret Santa? Is it like, so you mentioned last week there was going to be like that $5 a day for 5 days adding up to 25. Is that what they, is that what they settled on, or are they still doing like the old school?
No, yeah, it's a week long, so it's like $5 a day if you break it up. So, I mean, we got 4 more days to go, but we'll see. I mean, not a great start to the Secret Santa. And it's really tough where I'm like, I should just like, you know, when you're like, it's just about the Christmas spirit and it's got to be about the giving of the gifts. But you know what? I want something. Like, I want gifts too.
Yeah. I feel like, I guess that's an interesting setup, but to me, I don't think I'd want to do it that way. $5 a day for 5 days. Like, I'd rather just get the one gift. It's also being the person who's buying. It would just be so annoying to have to buy 5 small gifts. So you're not even also, you're not, unless you're getting gift cards or like a candy bar or something, you're not going to get a lot of gifts for $5. So it would just be so much easier to just buy one, you know, $25 item versus 5 $5 items.
I totally agree with you. I basically, like, I think I said my plan was just to walk around Walmart with $25 and kind of figure it out as I go. And then I was like, man, a lot of my stuff is like food items, like candies. I did find a mini Light Bright for like $8. And I was like, that's cute. Like, she could put it on her desk. But other than that, it was like a lot of food things. So I don't know. I do enjoy Secret Santa. I will keep you updated. When everything is done, I will let you know how it all turned out. But so far, Secret Santa has been a bust right now. So we'll see. But on that note, what have you been up to this week?
Not much. So they had the Game Awards last week. And my game did not win for Game of the Year. The game I was rooting for, I did not create a game and submit it. So want to be very clear with that. I do not have those skill sets. But I was a big fan of Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I'm a huge fan of the Xenoblade Chronicles series just as a whole. And yeah, I was a little disappointed to see that it did not win the contest or did not win best game. But I, you know, the, what is it called? Elden Ring did. So I felt like, okay, I feel like I should play it just to know what everybody else is kind of talking about. So I went ahead and bought it and started playing, and it's all right, I guess.
If you were to create your own video game, like, what would it be?
It'd probably be a JRPG, since that is like my preferred, generally speaking, that is my preferred genre. That's not to say that I don't play other things, but I definitely enjoy that. I don't know what elements I'd put into it, though. Probably, I really have to think about it, but it'd probably be similar to the maybe the Tales games, because I feel like the Tales games is one of the few franchises that I've played where very few of the titles have actually disappointed. Whereas some of the other ones, you know, were very hit or miss.
Interesting. I would play that. I think my game would be a, I guess, I don't know, like an RPG, maybe an MMO, and you like the game is you're a collector and you're trying to finish your collection. I'll figure it out later in the development stage of what you're collecting. But there's a certain, you're trying to complete your collection of whatever, cards or whatnot. And the game is you travel to flea markets, garage sales, and you use eBay to complete your collection. And you trade within the world.
I mean, that could be a very good game. I can't. Isn't that like essentially Pokemon?
Yes, but more real life, because it's like you're traveling to like where people would sell their Pokemon stuff in real life, like garage sales and flea markets.
Okay.
Had the like haggling systems, like gosh, what are those things called? When people pass away and then they have like a garage sale, but it's called something else.
Oh, the estate sale.
Estate sale, yeah. You go to estate sales. Maybe you would inherit some cards from someone. I think, yeah. Hmm. And then like, okay, how about this? And then you're a child. And if you don't stay on top of your collection, one day your mom throws it away or sells it at a garage sale.
Okay, so it's essentially like comic collecting or whatnot, but just a video game version. That wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea. I'd support it.
I feel like, though, now that I'm thinking about it, it might need to be a mobile game. I feel like that's something people play on their phones.
Yeah, I think I could agree with that. That would definitely be a mobile game. And also, the mobile games are not like bad anymore. Not to say that they're ever terrible. And there are a lot of terrible games out there for mobile. But, you know, I'm a kid who grew up with Snake being the best game that you could play on a phone. And now you have, like, you have games that look like AAA titles that are played on mobile. I'm thinking in particular, like, Genshin Impact, for example. That game is a mobile game. I mean, graphically and whatnot, it feels exactly like Breath of the Wild would. So it's just so interesting that we're at this kind of place where things look that nice.
Yeah, like games that are cross-platformed with your phone. Like, they're mobile and PC. Like, you can be playing it on your PC, but when you're on the go, you play it on your phone. It's like you can be with your game 24/7.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is amazing, to be quite honest. And yeah, one of my friends is like hardcore into Genshin. And we played, I don't like playing on mobile that much just because I grew up playing controllers and stuff. And I feel like I just have better control with a controller than I do with, you know, touchscreen or whatever. So I was playing on my PlayStation, but we were able to play together. So yeah, just the way it's going. So you could make a mobile game like that. That would actually not be too bad. And then you just use like the Unity engine or something like that, and you'll probably be good to go.
Yeah. I do think this is just like a comment to every developer and whatnot. Just make your games all platforms. Like, I want to play on PC with my friends on PlayStation, with people on Xbox. Like, make everything cross-platform. And we're all going to buy it up. Because if my friend has it on PlayStation, then I'm more likely to buy it now on PC because I don't own a PlayStation. But if anyone wants to give me a PS5, I'll accept. Just throwing it out there. To my Secret Santa. And my Secret Santa's listening. PS5 would be nice.
Not sure you can get it for $25, but you never know. Yeah, that would... Gosh, that... I do like my PS5 a lot. I kind of wish... Sometimes I wish I got the disc version. I got the all-digital version, which is fine because I prefer digital myself. Just I get it. There's something missing from not having the hard copy. But at the same time, I feel like it's not like having the hard copy back in the day. Now, granted, I haven't bought a hard copy video game since like 2019 or whatever. But I remember when I was a kid, you get like that booklet and it had all the information in it and stuff. And now it just feels like you don't, like all you just get is a hard case and that's about it. Like nothing really interesting about it.
speaking of like physical media, and like I am trying to switch away. I am trying to switch away from physical media, but then I bought a whole bunch of it on Black Friday. But do you ever think about like if a zombie apocalypse happened and then you like fortified yourself in your place, but you know, there won't be any like streaming stuff, like things would be down. Do you ever think about like what physical media, like what DVDs do I have to watch to like keep me entertained for the rest of my life? That's a good
point. I would probably be screwed because I have no DVDs. I have books. I have both digital and hard copy books, so I'd be fine in that aspect. And then my PlayStation, like, even though I have digital games, they're all downloaded to a hard drive or whatever. So theoretically, I could still play them unless they needed to ping the server. I don't know if they do or don't, but yeah, no, it's definitely something I've thought about a few times. If like, you know, hey, if the zombie apocalypse happened and I wanted to play my games and I lost internet connection, would it still work or does it have to ping home? But yeah, I would be, in terms of video entertainment, you know, and I would be having to watch YouTube or streaming until those systems eventually collapsed, and then I'd be, you know, screwed.
Like, should I be saving my favorite YouTube videos? Should I be, like, trying to download them? Put them on a hard drive? That way, like, during the apocalypse, I could be, like, watch Grape Stomping Lady or my favorite SNL skits.
I mean, these are important things to think about.
Yes. Well, I guess I would also have to figure out how to set up solar power. I think that's important.
Yeah. That's true. Well, that's actually a good point. Like, if it's one of those apocalypses that don't necessarily affect the atmosphere, if you will. Like, you know, we don't... It's not like the sun got blacked out or anything like that. Then it's like, okay, can we get our own, like, solar generator and maintain our own infrastructure that way?
Those are my thoughts. Now that I'm kind of like, I don't know, I feel like we've discussed this, I don't know if I discussed it on the podcast, that I bought a CD binder, like a really big binder, and I'm putting all my DVDs in there. That way I don't have to keep the cases. So I've been thinking about that a lot. Like, are these the movies that I can rewatch all the time? Like, how many Marvel marathons can I do?
And that's a fair point. I remember those days having, like, that huge CD binder with all of your CDs. And, of course, I was of the right age where a lot of the CDs were also ripped CDs that I made using, you know, I don't even remember what the big software was.
Did you ever use Kazaa? Was Kazaa one of them?
I did use Kazaa, yeah. And then I think there was one called BearShare. And then there was one called Morpheus. And then there was Napster. And then I think LimeWire was one of them back in the day. So, yeah. And I legit have no idea if any of those sites still exist today. I'm sure they exist in some format. I don't know if they're still what they're used for, though.
Remember when Napster came back, but then it was like a subscription-based thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They came back and they tried to go legit, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but it wasn't as good. It's not as good if it's not... Also, like, it wasn't a pool-sharing thing anymore. Like, you downloaded it from the site, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like LimeWire is now a marketplace for music NFTs. All right, well, on one hand, I'm like, okay, I guess they went to go, they went legit, but at the same time, I am not a fan of NFTs, so whatever.
I think I understand what NFTs are. Like, they're just digital items, correct?
Yes and no. It's even more innocuous than that. It's essentially just a ledger pointing to a URL saying that you own that image. That's really what it is. So it's not even like theoretically, it's not even the actual item. It's just a record saying you own the item. But then there's nothing stopping somebody from right-clicking and save as or whatever. So,
but I don't even own the URL it's hosted on, or like this, like, So what if the server is like, we're done. Like, we're bored of this. We're going to stop maintaining it.
Yep.
And then that I just is lose my NFT?
Pretty much, yeah. That's kind of, and I know we'll probably get people hating on us for saying it because our NFTs are really popular, but I think it's just Beanie Babies for tech bros, to be quite honest.
Should we make NFTs? Can the NFTs be audio?
I guess.
Maybe we just like take clips of the podcast and we sell them.
Yeah, I would love to see if they bring back King of the Hill, an NFT themed episode where Bobby gets into it and Hank's like, do I look like I know what an NFT is?
Do you think Peggy's still on the same computer? Wait, she's got a Mac now, or she's got an Apple computer, right?
The in-universe version of Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, the in-universe version, because like, what is it? They called it a Blueberry or something.
Yeah, because it has... It's an old one. Well, I mean, it's probably new at the time. Because remember when they had like the different color backings?
Mm-hmm.
I believe hers is orange, right? Or is it, I'm just making that up.
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I'd have to watch it.
Because it was that Christmas episode. Speaking of the apocalypse.
Yes. Y2K. We'll have to... I don't know if we're doing that episode, but we'll have to talk about that again sometime. But right, until then, let's jump into episode 39. Orange, you sad, I did say banana. And this one was a tough one to like write out because you know, the old joke, I keep wanting by default to type in orange, you glad I didn't say banana, but it's orange, you sad, I did say banana. I can't relate 100% to this episode, but in a lot of ways I can. And it's a con heavy episode. And I think it's a very poignant point that they make through it. But let's just jump right into it. Season 10, episode 6. The episode starts at Ted Wasanasan's house. He's having some kind of get-together. It's not really clear what he's doing, but he has a bunch of people over. And Khan is impressed over all the stuff in the house. And, of course, Min is too. They're just, I guess, clout chasers or whatever. I don't know what term you would use, but they definitely... want to have rich friends and have a lot of nice stuff and whatnot. Min's like, I didn't even realize another person's money can make me happy. And Khan looks outside and notices the pool, and it's an amazing large swimming pool that he just had installed. And then Ted shows up and is like, oh, I noticed you looking at the house. You must notice the Laotian lowland influence. And then they introduce him to Fong, who is an older gentleman, and he's a legendary guerrilla fighter outside of Laos. And Khan's like, oh, sorry they killed all your friends. And he's just kind of like, yes, that was very sad. But I am dedicated to honoring their memory by continuing to fight. And Khan's like, oh, yeah, the other side. So what do you think a smaller version of that pool would cost for me? And they kind of eye roll at him because he's, you know, they're trying to talk about something important like Laotian rights and, you know, things that are important to the motherland. And Khan's like, oh, well, how's this pool? So I don't know. I find it funny because all Khan cares about is... Funny and sad is all Khan cares about is material possessions. Like, I don't think we see him... I don't think we see way too much of him in the entirety of the series where he cares about something that isn't money.
Well, there's a couple of things I really love in the beginning. First off, Peggy's computer is blue. I just Googled it, so you don't have to tweet us. Second, I love when Khan and Min are in Ted's house and he sees the TV and it's like the African... planes with a giraffe and stuff, and he's like, I don't know if I'm looking at a TV or if this is a window. And I don't know why I always laugh about that line.
That's right, he did say that, and it was pretty funny when he said it, because yeah, he's just like, oh, I don't know if that's a TV or a window. And I guess, and they make comments like that about HD TVs, and I think like in universe, like, or not in universe, but real world. That's about when HDTV started to become more mainstream. So I guess it would make sense that they make those comments.
I do remember when like really high definition was like starting to take off, and sometimes I'd be like, I can't watch TV on this. Like, it's too high def. It looks too crisp to me. And now I'm like, if I don't have that, this is garbage.
I remember when I got my first like really high def 4K TV a few years ago, when I did a TV upgrade, and I started watching old movies from like the early 2000s or whatever. So early CGI, and man, it looks really bad on 4K TV. Like, bad CGI looks really bad on 4K. Yeah, sometimes it looks like a PlayStation 2 like crossover video, or you know, a PlayStation 2 cutscene or whatever.
Yeah, I was recently watching some like old horror movies from the like 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. And man, if they haven't restored them, gosh, looking at kind of VHS looking stuff is really tough on 4K TV. It's so grainy.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny when you think about it. Like, oh, in a sense, it feels like we're going backwards, but we're still going forward. It's weird. So we're back at Khan's house, and he has, like, the pool guy over to give him an estimate. And he's like, oh, I want the same tile that used at Tenwasana-san's pool and stuff. And they give him the estimate. It's way too much, way beyond what he can afford. They never actually show us the dollar amount, but it's clear it's too much because Khan yells, and the guys in the alley can hear him, but they don't really react. They don't care. They don't really care about Khan. They have a love-hate relationship with Khan. Khan comes up to the guys in the alley and says, oh, my dreams are shattered. And Bill's like, mine too. Want a beer? And he's like, how could I ever afford a pool like Ted Wasana saw? And then Hank's like, oh, well, you know, it's not that hard. I mean, you're looking at just a concrete shell with a suction and return and motor-assisted plumbing. If you could find a few guys who like construction and give them rights to the pool, you can make it for cheap. And, you know, that's when they kind of have a aha moment. They're like, hey, yeah, we could do it and we'll get a pool. So everybody's all happy and they're all on board. And the guys in the backyard starting to dig things up, and they're going all in for it, not just with shovels, but they also have like a backhoe and everything, and they're doing it right. I like how Bill is wearing a helmet, and he's like, oh, you know, you got to protect your head. But then Dale, I guess, loses grip of a shovel as he's digging, and the shovel just comes and flies into Bill's gut.
Yeah, after he's showing off the hard hat, when he's showing Nancy, yeah, like this hard hat protects my. The most valuable thing, you gotta protect your head. And then Dale with the shovel. I wish I was like able to just be like, I want a pool, and then build myself a pool.
Very same. I think the same thing. I could do small things like, oh, I want a shelf. Let me put up a shelf and I should be good to go. I could do that all day, all night. But when it comes to like anything bigger than that, then I'm probably not going to be the greatest. So they're building a rectangular pool, and even Peggy points out, oh, a rectangular pool. It's like we're living next door to a mid-level hotel. Bobby's so excited that the pool's going there, and then Hank's like, well, first you're going to have to go and take some courses on swimming, CPR, and pool etiquette. And Bobby's like, huh, I'm still excited. So, hey, that works out. He's going to learn something, and he's still going to be excited. And while the guys are working real hard, Khan and Min are inside. It's like, oh, this is a dream come true. You know, what is Connie's grade point average? A? Well, A plus. And that steak, is it select? No, it's prime. And are we really having a pool in our backyard? Yes, we're really having a pool. And Khan and Min are happy. But like, the only thing that can make our life better is to get into Nine Rivers. And they kind of remember, oh, Ted is on the membership committee, so we might be able to make something work out. So at Nine Rivers, we see that Khan is at the pro shop. Believe it or not, I actually, years and years ago, belonged to a private golf club for a very short period of time. I do not remember what the rules were, but I don't know that the pro shops were open to the public. Like, I thought you had to be a member, but maybe I'm wrong.
It feels like Khan would always have, like, a guest pass. I know, like, Ted doesn't think of them as equals, but, like, I don't know. I feel like Khan would get a pass on being there all the time just because it seems like he would spend a lot of money in the pro shop.
I guess that's true. Yeah, and of course, Khan's not really in the pro shop to buy anything. He's just kind of loitering, hoping that he can run into Ted with Sana Song, and sure enough, he does. He sees Ted and Fong there. They've got boxes of stuff, and you know, Khan jumps out. Oh, hey, Ted, how's it going? And he's like, oh, we're getting ready to distribute food to the poor. And Khan's like, oh, is that a euphemism for playing a round of golf? And there, he's like, Khan, do you realize it's Machu Picchu today? It's like, you know, very famous holiday or very major holiday in Laos. And I think, I looked it up briefly. I think it's like just that entire region celebrates it. So I don't know. I mean, it's a big thing in Laos, but I guess it's also big in Cambodia and whatnot. Just fun fact. Anybody who knows more than I am, feel free to correct me. But he's like, oh, yeah. I'm throwing a big Machu Picchu party over at my house. You should come. And he invites Ted. And, you know, Ted is like, okay, yeah, we'll go. And I'll bring some friends or whatever. And Khan is like, oh, it's great that we're getting so much closer together. And then Ted interrupts like, Khan, the poor. And then Khan's like, oh, yeah, I hope to get money soon. At the Arlen YMCA, Bobby is signing up for a CPR class. Or more accurately, Peggy is signing Bobby up for a CPR class. And they're like, well, let's see. We have a basic one-day course. A two-week course that goes over like advanced procedures for seniors and infants. And they're like, great, we'll sign up for the two-week course. And Bobby's like, Mom! And it's like, Peggy's like, your grandfather might visit, and I want to be able to say that we did everything we could. Oh, gosh. That one makes me laugh, because it's like, it's a not-so-subtle way of saying Peggy wants Cotton dead.
I mean, oh, man. That part always makes me laugh as well. But you don't think Hank would jump in?
Hank probably would. I feel like Hank is the kind of person who is like always has a plan or is always prepared for everything. So that's probably why he wants Bobby to do it. Not because Hank wants to slack off and not, you know, perform CPR, take care of anybody, but more that he thinks, oh, if Bobby's going to be at the pool, he needs to be a responsible person as well. But I think, yeah, if Cotton were drowning and stuff, and even if Bobby didn't know proper CPR, Hank would still try to save him. And I'm sure somebody around there would have known. But yeah, it's still funny thinking about how Peggy reacted.
Have you ever taken a CPR class?
I have not. Believe it or not, I have never taken one.
So I get CPR certified every couple of years. And I used to go to the same firefighter who would teach it. It's mostly like firefighters doing it as like moonlighting gigs to make extra money.
Mm-hmm.
But the same guy would always start off as like, you're going to learn CPR today, but it's not going to be like, he said, it's like, it's always going to be different when you're doing it on a real person. He's like, you'll never be prepared when you do it on a real person. And I'm always like, well then why am I here?
I guess having sub knowledge is better than having no knowledge. I don't know. I guess I could see that, though.
I mean, well, I hope I could save a life. I hope I you know what? I would save Khan. If he was drowning, I wouldn't let him drown. I would save Khan.
I could see that, like, it's one thing to imagine how you would behave in a controlled setting of a classroom and learning it that way. But then in an actual emergency where people are freaking out and stuff like that, you might all of a sudden just draw a blank on what you're supposed to do. At the, I guess you'd call it a pool christening or the pool opening. Hank gives like a little bit of a speech, and he's like, to a man whose backyard soil was of a consistency that made it easy to dig and had no crossing sewer lines, which is exactly something Hank would say. Min calls out to Khan that the guests have arrived, so Khan runs to the front door. He's wearing a beach bum shirt, and he's all, you know, he's dressed to be at the pool. And he goes to the front door, and Ted's there with Fong and a few of the Laotian friends, and they're all dressed properly. Like, they're dressed for, I don't know, like a fancy dinner party, more so than a pool party. As they go to the backyard, Khan's like, oh, my redneck neighbors built this pool for me. How about I make them build a railroad for me next and talk about some payback there? And they're like, Chinese built the railroads, not the Laotians. And Khan's like, oh, same difference. And then all of a sudden, you know, everybody in the Laotian community who's there is offended. And he's like, oh, what? Just a joke. Too far? And then Ted's like, oh, Khan, can I have a word with you? Fong and I think that you've been disconnected from your heritage and you forgot that you are Lao. And Fong's like, oh, you've destroyed your own identity and whitewashed it and everything. Khan's like, oh, what do you mean? He's like, we think you're a banana. And then they're like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, think of the properties of a banana. Yellow on the outside, but white on the inside. And he's like, oh, I'm not a banana. And then you overhear Min yelling, steak's on, who needs ketchup? And then Khan kind of, you know, sheepishly smiles and we go to commercial. So that's going to be the overall arching, that's the overarching theme of this episode, is that Khan's being called a banana because he enjoys, I guess, Western stuff, and he doesn't have a lot in his house to signify his Laotian origin.
Did Khan not tell them, like, I guess he was just like, I'm having a party. What is it called?
Machu Picchu, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I'm having a party to celebrate this holiday, this Laotian holiday. And, now I'm trying to think, I'm like, how do people celebrate this holiday in general?
I don't know. I think supposedly it's some kind of Buddhist holiday in the area, from my understanding. I'm guessing it might differ from people to people, like different people might celebrate it differently depending on socioeconomic class or whatever. Because we see everybody show up in like formal dinner attire and whatever, which makes me think, okay, they're not like, okay, I don't, they, I guess this group of Laotians celebrate it this way. They in like a somber or on a serious matter and stuff, but there's no way like everybody celebrates it like that, but I could be wrong.
Oh, but I think it's a very like meditative like thing. So it's a very somber celebration.
My guess is it's probably more like a Christmas type holiday and less like a 4th of July holiday. So it's more about togetherness and family and stuff, more so than like fun and barbecue and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's kind of what Ted thought. Because I think, the impression I get is that Khan just didn't even realize it was the Machu Picchu Day or whatever. And he just kind of planned for this party. And then when he realized, oh, it is, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm throwing a party too. And he just used that as an excuse to show off his pool. Like, he had no real interest in the actual holiday.
I also love when he's like, build my furniture. And the guys are just like, kind of like look at each other and like, okay, I guess we'll just go build this furniture. And they start assembling it. I love that attitude of like not really asking any questions and let's kind of just do this. I remember another episode where I guess this older lady or gentleman lived in a house and they passed away. And this guy comes around. He's like, he's looking for workers to help fix his mom's house. And then the guys just get in the truck and start working on the house without really asking any questions.
Yes, I know exactly what episode you're talking about. And that was hysterical with it out because, they're just like, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I do think, though, that they're like, this is a commutative pool. So like his furniture is like our furniture when we're at the pool.
Yeah, I kind of think that's the impression I get anyway, is that they're kind of like, oh, this is like, it's in Khan's house, but this is everybody's pool. So yeah, we should put out the chairs and stuff.
Though, I mean, to give like props to Khan, he didn't kick them out when the party started. Like, he wasn't like, oh, Nine Rivers people are here. You guys got to go and you can come use the pool another time. He was just like, whatever. And he was like, this is a party. Like, I'm celebrating my pool. So there are moments where I'm like, if I really believe there was no Nine Rivers in Arlen, that Khan would be really good friends with the rest of the people on the street.
Probably. I think the big thing is that Khan sees himself as above everybody else. But I also think that kind of feeds into his own personal low self-esteem. The reason I say that is because I don't think he's happy with who he, Khan, the human being, is. He always wants to like fit in with this elite crowd and everything like that. And I think part of that is him insulting the people that he sees beneath them, even though realistically they are on the same level. Like, you know, they live in the same neighborhood. It's not like Khan has a super rich house and then everybody else is poor or whatever. It's like they probably all paid roughly the same amount for their home.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, I do. Yeah, they all probably make around the... I feel like Hank makes good, decent money.
Yeah. You know. Well, and he's kind of dual income, too. Now, granted, Peggy's work seems unstable. It's not like she's working a steady, you know, 40-hour week or whatever. But they are dual income, so that could help.
Well, maybe Hank makes a lot of money. And that allows Peggy to kind of pursue these other avenues.
Maybe. They are good at budgeting, though. Like, they don't buy a lot of fancy things, whereas the Super Nintendo phones do, so.
Oh, man. I think about that episode where Bobby has to do that one thing and he thinks they're really rich.
Yes, I think we might be doing that one. I'll have to double check. That's a good one. After the break, Khan is upset about Ted's statement. He looks around his house and he's like, you know, there's no sign of my Asian heritage. And I guess to an extent, he's true. There's like nothing, at least not in the shot that we see, there's nothing that looks like it came out of Asia at all. Or obviously out of Asia, it all looks pretty Western standard stuff, I guess you could say, standard stuff for an American household. And he's like, you know, somebody walks around here and thinks, oh, this is where Johnny Smith lives, not Khan. He's like, oh, I can't even pronounce my own name. And Min's like, oh, you're just stressing out. You're fine. You spoke perfect loud to your mother last week. And then Connie walks in and Khan speaks loud to Connie, and Connie doesn't understand. She's like, what, are you swearing at me, or is it time for dinner? And like, oh, she's not even, you know, our daughter can't even speak Klaotian. This is embarrassing. And Min's like, yeah, I guess we can connect to our heritage a little bit. And it's like, hey, you know that gong that we hit during American Idol? I'll show you what it's really for. The guys go to the pool, and Hank's like, oh, this is a weird weed that's near the pool, and Khan shows up, and Khan's like in, I guess, what you would consider villager outfit, and he has like a little wooden watering bucket, and he is like, oh, you know, that's my celery that I'm growing in my backyard. We Laotians, we are very self-sufficient and we don't need grocery stores. And they're like, okay, and they go for a swim. We go to Ted's house, and Khan talks a little bit about, oh, how we are doing a little bit more to support the Laotian culture. And, you know, Ted's like, oh, well, you still need to get in touch with your Lao self. Like, you're still a slave to American luxury. And then Khan actually pretty smartly points out, like, I'm a little bit confused as I'm looking around your house and you have a pool and a big screen TV and 4-car garage and stuff. And Ted's like, yes, I own all these things, but they don't own me. And of course, appropriately, Khan's like, huh? And then Ted's like, well, let me explain. And he pulls out this little trinket that he has in his pocket, and he says, you know, this statue was created 300 years ago It is, it embodies the Leo spirit. As long as I have it, I am always connected to my heritage. And Khan's like, oh, okay, so I just need to get one of those and then I'll be fine. Do you have a spare one? And Ted says, oh, you're not ready yet. It won't mean to you what it means to me. So at this point, I kind of feel like Ted's just screwing with Khan. But at the same time, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. Because on one hand, I feel like Ted's just screwing with Khan to see how much control he has over Khan and Khan's like well-being or his emotional self or whatever. But then at the same time, I also think he's one of those types who's like a gatekeeper, if you will. Like he's the, oh, you're not a real Laotian because you do not follow our definition of what a Laotian is kind of thing.
I think Ted, is like a money's guy. You know, he's like, I support the charity by donating to it a lot. You know, I fund the charity. But since you can't fund the charity, you have to work in the charity. You know, like, so, I mean, later in this episode, we find out more about what Khan has to do to kind of uplift the community. But I really feel like Ted's job is to, like, facilitate all that. You know, that's how he runs it, you know, and he's like, I don't want to be there, so I have to be here. So that's why he has that little like crystal like statue trinket thing, which I find is like, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of cool that like, I mean, he's using it for all the wrong reasons, but to kind of have something be like, this connects me to my culture. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I could see the benefits of that, or I don't know if benefits is the word I want to use, but like, yeah, I could see why somebody would do that or why how he would come to it. But it's also like your heritage and your cultural identity is not something that could be summed up in a little, you know, 2-inch trinket or whatever, but whatever. It also could just be that's how Ted is gatekeeping himself. Like, he wants to have fancy stuff and whatnot, but he tells himself that, oh, because I have this thing, I'm still connected to my Laotian heritage. So that, you know, all these things don't mean anything because I still have this. But yeah, and I just feel like they're screwing with him. But we go back to Khan's place and we see that his house is stripped of like all Western stuff. And it looks pretty much like what you would probably see in a Laotian village. I've never been to Laos, but I'm imagining that's probably what it looks like. And Khan's like, oh, what are we having for dinner? And Min's all angry. He's like, we're having rice and meat for dinner, like the past few times. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just so used to American palate and variety in food. And in the background, you can hear the guys are all swimming and having fun. And they're a little upset because they're not having fun. And Khan's like, oh, let me tell you a story about two chickens growing up and how he rode them in the wheelbarrow and stuff. In the background, you can still hear people like, oh, cannonball. And it's making them a little upset. Speaking of the pool, the next day, speaking of the pool, you go outside just to see what everybody else is doing. And they're all kind of in like the inner tubes, just kind of floating, enjoying themselves. And he's like, you know, sometimes I think I'd like to visit Indiana. Is that weird? And like, no, that's a great dream, Hank. And Hank is like, Khan is beating himself up for God knows why. Yeah, but he should just be out here having fun. And Dale's like, man, I can enjoy this man's pool as he suffers. In the bedroom, they're watching a loud drama. And they're sleeping on the floor, like they got rid of their mattress and they just have like a sheet on the ground and pillows. And Khan is still all into it. And Min's kind of losing interest in it. And as Khan walks out, she actually puts on Friends. Yeah, Khan's like getting hardcore into this. Even in the next rule, in the next scene where we see Bobby mentioning, oh, I took a... I passed the test, so they get ready to go to the pool. Khan actually like filled the pool with algae and lotus plants and koi fish and whatnot. He's like, oh, it is a reflecting pool. And they're like, we had a deal, Khan. He's like, oh, you had a deal with the Americanized Khan. not the true Khan anymore, and everybody's angry. But yeah, Khan's just going crazy now.
I mean, to convert a pool that fast, I mean, to withstand, for koi fish to be able to live in there, I mean, he must have been at it all night, you know, replacing the chlorine water.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe they weren't out for a day. Like, that's going to be my headcanon. They were busy doing something that day, and Khan was able to make all the changes while nobody was paying attention.
And I do think this all stems kind of like what you were saying about, like, how Khan feels about himself. Kind of the one comment of, you're a banana. And he kind of is just like, I'm not a banana. And he's like, let me prove to you how unbanana-like I am. And goes like full 180 on everything.
Yep. At Ted's house, Khan started about how he rediscovered his roots. And he's like, okay, so I'm now, you know, a real Laotian now. And Ted's like, oh, not yet. And then Khan's like, oh, great. The Lao community is not taken seriously like the Cuban community in Florida. He's talking about how, like, the Cubans have political influence in America while still having kind of ties back to rebel groups back home. So it's like, we need something like that here in order for us to be successful, or in order for us to be taken seriously. So they are creating, like, there is a rebel group in Laos, like in the Laos jungles. And Ted is going to, with the help of Fung, is going to help lead the way. And Ted wants Khan to join his militia. At first, Khan's just like, oh, you want me to write a check to support these people? Yeah, I'm happy to write a check. It's like, no, we need you to actually join our military. At first, Khan is not into joining, but, you know, Ted kind of plays this mind game with him, saying, like, oh, you know, what's worse, to live as a banana or to die as a Lao man? And Khan puts on the uniform and goes and sees Min, and Min's not happy. She's not buying it. She's like, oh, this is too far. And Khan's like, you know what, Min, you're acting like a banana. And Min is upset, and Khan walks out because he's got to go to training. And, you know, I guess that was kind of the breaking point for Min, because she's like, Connie, stop hauling rice. We're going to go to Whataburger.
I did want Whataburger. After she said that, I was like, I really want Whataburger. See, this is kind of what I was talking about, how, like, Ted is, like, the kind of recruiter guy, and that's why he doesn't have to do anything. He recruits Khan and these other people into this crazy, crazy guerrilla military group that's gonna, I don't know, what are they gonna do? I mean, they talk about it later, but, like, what is Ted expecting to happen?
I don't know. I think that's why I still kind of think he's screwing with them, because, like, in the next scene we see them at Nine Rivers, and they're, like, going through military training, which, one, I mean, I guess Ted is, like, maybe high enough in power to where the people will let him get away with it. But, yeah, it seems weird that they would do it there. But they're doing a training, and Ted's still dressed up like his normal self. But they've got Khan and, like, four other guys dressed up in military gear doing basic training, and Fong's, like, teaching them and stuff, and Khan's just... Khan's not really into it, and he's getting distracted because he wants to play golf, and he sees everybody playing golf. And Ted's like, I convinced Councilman Everett to make the first Tuesday in May Lao Freedom Day, and we are going to march from the nail salon to the boba tea shop, and we're going to look smart doing it. And yeah, it feels like these five guys are just random guys, similar to Khan, who are kind of kissing butt of Ted and want to be like Ted, but then Ted takes advantage of them. And yeah, I think this is all just for show or whatever, because there's no, like, Ted's a smart guy. There's no way he thinks that these five people are going to be able to take down the communist regime.
But does the other guy know that? I mean, what's his name?
Fong. Well, I think he's different because he's an actual guerrilla fighter and supporting other guerrilla fighters. So he's probably just thinking, oh, these are just five more bodies we can throw to our team. and whatever. So he might actually be serious.
So, okay. I mean, like, I don't know if he lives there now or if he's just visiting, but I don't know. This feels now kind of like really thinking about it. It feels all weird. Like that Ted is recruiting these people to go fight in this war. And then like Ted might not be taking it seriously, but this other guy is taking it like really seriously. And I don't know what is going to happen to everyone.
They never really show the end game. And now I'm really curious what it might be. In the alley, Khan comes up and he's wearing his uniform and he has a black eye. And Dale's like, oh, did you try to steal the pool from somebody who can fight back? And he's like, no, I took a butt of the rifle to the face. And Dale's like, ah, poetic justice. You steal a pool from us and then a butt of a rifle steals the health of your face. And Hank's like, I still don't really get what this army is, but why don't you go and clean the pool? And you know, he's like, oh, this is a serious deal. When Ted says the code word Siddhartha, that's when we're going to be serious. This is not just a toy army or make-believe or whatever. And then Hank's like, uh-huh. So what's going to happen when he says this code word? And he's like, oh, we're going to get onto a cargo plane and fly to Laos. And assuming we're not shot down, we'll parachute in. And if we don't die on impact or get shot down, then we will march into the capital where we'll either be killed. Some may get taken prisoner. Now, we may be tortured and re-educated and then forced to fight in their army. Huh. And then Khan just kind of walks out and he's like, anybody else notice he cuts a good figure in uniform? Now, Khan goes home. Connie's practicing violin, sees Khan, gets upset, brings out an Asian lute and plays that instead. Min is watching what I think is like E! News or some kind of entertainment news. And it's like, oh, don't start. I'm not going to turn this off. And it's like, oh, what is it? It's like, oh, you know, it's Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson promoting some kind of workout tape. And it's like, oh, when I was a banana, I would have eaten this up. And Min's like, oh, I'm really starting to hate this term banana. And he's like, I know, me too. And I'm tired of doing all this just to have Ted saying, I'm sorry, Khan, that is not good enough. And Min brings up a good point. It's like, why do you let Ted tell you what to do? That's why you fled the communist in Laos and the HOA in Orange County. So basically saying, don't you just want to be happy? Like, don't you want to eat baby back ribs and listen to the music you want and whatnot? And Khan just has that realization. He goes to Ted's house, rings the doorbell. He has all of his military gear in his arms. And Ted's like, oh, Khan, what's with the visit? And why do you have your uniform? And he just drops off the stuff. And he's like, oh, well, thank you for helping me get in touch with my roots, but I'm not going to need this stuff anymore. It's like this. If you need somebody to come and play golf, give me a call. But if you want somebody to feel guilty, leave me out of it. And he walks away and Ted kind of gets, Ted's upset. He just gets his maid to pick up everything. We go back to the pool. Everybody's having a good time. Pool's back to normal. And then Khan does his normal, like, oh, I'm better than you, Hank. Khan's like, maybe I'll buy out your house and then I bulldoze your fence and make an even bigger pool. And he's like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then Bill chokes on a hot dog and Bobby has to go and give him the Heimlich. It's like, how many times I have to tell you, Mr. Dotrieve Chew? And of course, he's fine. And then the episode ends.
Those first aid, CPR, pool training classes really paid off at the end for, Well, I guess they paid off for Bill. This is Bobby saved his life.
Yes, exactly. Bill came out on top on this one.
Also, do you think Min doesn't care about as much because she kind of grew up in a little higher class than maybe Khan did?
I think that's part of it, probably, but I also think it's because Min isn't as much of a kiss ass as Khan is.
I mean, they both really want to get in the club, though.
They both really want to get in the club, but I think Khan is willing to go to those extremes. And Min, not so much. Like, I think to Min, there was a point where it was just too much. Like, I think she was fine with maybe some of the stuff that they were doing, But as they started to like get more rid of more and more of their comforts and whatnot, she was just like, okay, this is a bit too far. And I kind of agree. Like, I mean, I'm not Asian, so I can't really talk about that, like, from that perspective, but I am, like, I'm half black, and I'll get a lot of people who will say, like, oh, you're not really black, or you're whitewashed or stuff, or, you know, use the term Oreo or whatever, and it's like, who are you to be able to dictate, like, an identity like that? Like, you're not the gatekeeper of identity. It's, you know, it's not like Khan has to live like a poor Laotian in order to prove that he's Laotian. He is Laotian. And how he chooses to identify and how he chooses to live his life is his own business.
Watching this, I kind of can relate to Khan in a bit. I am half Asian and I'm half Mexican. I'm half Korean, half Mexican. And it just like, I think back when I was younger, I really craved like the respect of both. Like, you want it to be like respected by both cultures, and you know, you want to be like, I am a part of both of you. And now as an adult, I'm kind of just like, I don't care. I kind of just like embrace myself. I embrace both cultures, and I like participate when I want, like, can and do, but I don't let that define my life. You know, I don't think that should define who you are.
Exactly. And it's, and you get to say who you are. Like, you, nobody, like, you're not, nobody else is the gatekeeper, is what I guess I'm saying. Like, yeah, nobody else gatekeeps for you. They don't get to say, you know, this is how a real X acts, or this is how a real Y acts. Like, you get to be who you are. That's what you are. Khan is Laotian, regardless of what they think. He was born in Laos. He has Laotian parents. He has a Lao ethnicity, speaks Lao, all that stuff. So what if he enjoys baby back ribs and he enjoys watching American television or something? It doesn't all of a sudden mean he's less of a Laotian person. But, you know, there's always people out there who will gatekeep for you and say, oh, you're not really one of us because you don't fit this weird paradigm or this weird definition that we have. And Khan, I definitely think, is more so. They're both definitely like kiss asses and whatever, but I think Khan is definitely more so than Min is, and he really, really wants Ted to like him, and that's why he does it. And then that's kind of when Min tells him, like, hey, you know, we left the communists so that we didn't have to deal with this stuff. Like, why are we letting Ted Wasanasong tell us how we can enjoy our lives?
Yeah, it's just, you know, they're just being Khan and Min, and, you know, they enjoy it. And I'm glad that everyone got to have a fun time at the pool. And bananas are cool. I like bananas, and I like Oreos, and I like whatever else. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a delicious food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also be you. Be who you want to be. Who cares what other people think you are? It doesn't matter if you're not enough or too much. You're actually always enough. It's up to you what you are. It's not up to anybody else. But yeah, if I had like a message, or I guess not even a message, that is like what the episode is saying. It's like, hey, be who you are and be happy about it. And don't let anybody else tell you who you need to be.
Yeah, and it's a great lesson. I always feel like Khan has all these kind of like, don't let other people define you lessons. And it takes him a while, but he eventually learns.
I do like that he did actually stand up to Ted in the end. Like, it's not like we actually got that resolution. It wasn't just him like just saying, oh, I'm moving forward or whatever. It was actually him going to Ted and saying, yeah, I don't need this anymore. And if you need to make somebody feel guilty, call someone else. So it's just like him kind of telling Ted off. I did love that ending as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, everything was really, really good. And it's great seeing him stand up to Ted. He does it not often, but when he does kind of stand his ground and he's like, you know, I really just care about my family and just kind of being myself and enjoying the luxuries I work so hard for. So, mm-hmm. It's, you know, really great. And I, Does Khan even play golf?
He has all the equipment, so maybe. We don't really actually see him play much except for that one episode where they're at Nine Rivers that we reviewed in the past, but I don't know. But yeah, that's all I've got in this episode.
Yeah, same for me. It's a really great episode. Like I always say, one of my favorites. Definitely worth a few rewatches, you know? It's, you know, some of these episodes drag, but I really feel like this one goes by really quickly. Like, once you start watching it, it goes by really fast. So, it's a good watch.
Yes. Yeah, I agree, and I really like it because it's one of the few where we actually see some serious character growth come out of Khan. So, next week, we will be reviewing Queasy Rider. So, please join us as we do that one. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.